is July 13th, and we're with Warren Sevier in Richland, and it's S-E-V-I-E-R.
All right.
Okay. And I guess where I'd like to start is maybe a little background about, like you were starting with, what brought you to Hanford.
Okay. I worked for an instrument company back east, and started looking around for a job, and this was advertised in the Cleveland papers. So I submitted an application, and here I am.
What was the job highly tuned to what you were doing, or?
I was working for an instrument company, and the job was for instrument technicians.
Okay. Why are they advertising in Cleveland, do you think?
Probably. No. I don't know.
Yeah.
At that time, they had in the previous fall, they'd had a layoff here. They laid off a lot of people. And then with the new plants coming on, like the reactors and redox and uranium plant, they needed more people, so they went out across country looking for people.
So what time of year do you think it was that you saw the ad?
It had to be during the summer.
Of 1950?
1950, right.
Summer of 50.
And I came here in October of 1950.
Were you married then or have kids or anything?
No, I was single then.
Okay, so it was pretty easy to pick up and make
it was,
move.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was the pay better than what you were getting, or what was the reason?
Well, yeah, it was a factory job where I was working.
Okay.
And I wanted to work in the field as a field engineer. At that time, they had a cadet engineering course, and I was scheduled to take it. Every once in a while, somebody from the shop would be qualified enough to take it, but the management decision came down that no one else would be taking the course in the future without a degree, and I didn't have that.
Okay, right.
And so that's when I started looking for another job.
And did they pay your way to come out for an interview, or how did that work?
No, I submitted an application, and I guess they gave me the job. There was some correspondence back and forth, of course.
Okay. Any negotiation about salary, or did they just tell you what it was going to pay?
No, they said, told me what it was.
Uh-huh. Was it a step up?
Oh yeah, from the factory work.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Great.
What I was doing in the factory was assembling instruments and calibrating them.
Mm-hmm. What kind of instruments were they?
They were for powerhouse type, temperature, pressure, flow.
All of which they had out here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere or another, okay. So you picked up and moved out. Did you know where Pasco and Richland were? Were you familiar with the territory?
Well, I had been on the West Coast when I was sailing in the Merchant Marine, but I'd never been.
Yeah.
I worked for Alaska Steamship one time, but never in Seattle. And I didn't realize that there was deserts and dunes,
right,
like everybody else.
Did you drive out here?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it must have been a little bit of a surprise when you found you had arrived when you still didn't look like you were in Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where'd you stay when you got here?
They had dormitories.
Okay.
In Richland, and I stayed in the men's dorm.
How long did that last?
Let's see.
Got here in October.
Yeah. I think it lasted I stayed till 52 till I got married.
Okay. Oh, you stayed in the dorms for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a normal thing to do? It wasn't just a transient, temporary?
Yeah, there was 13, I think 13 men's dorms, and I don't know how many women's dorms.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you start work immediately upon getting here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So where was your first assignment?
Well, in a 700 area powerhouse, it still had some clearance, I think, to go through. But anyway, they needed, they had the equipment from the company that I work for. And wanted somebody to calibrate, right?
I wonder if that's why they were advertising in Cleveland.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think they were just, their ad probably appeared all around the country, I think.
Right, right. Refresh my memory on the 700 area powerhouse. Where was that?
It was back of the 703 building, which is part of it is still there. It was in that open space where the bus terminal is now.
Okay. Where did that power go to, do you think? Steam or?
It was steam, and it took care of the office buildings. Also, I lived in those little apartments on George Washington Way, and they were steam heated at the time.
Okay. So that was a pretty standard non-nuclear job then?
Right. That was just till the clearance came through.
And for that job required no clearance?
No.
And how long were you there, do you think? A matter of weeks or months?
Oh, just a few weeks.
Okay.
And then I...
Any problems getting clearance?
No.
Yeah. So where'd you go after that?
Went to the 200 areas.
Okay. And power or?
In instruments. They had a separate instrument division.
Okay.
They were set up with different kinds of divisions. There was separation division and so forth. Reactor had one division and separations, 200 area separation, and metal prep was 300.
Mm-hmm. All had their own separate instrument people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But as a group, most of us belonged to the Instrument Society.
Right. Did you ever have meetings on campus amongst all of you? Or did you go to classes that would have mixed people from all areas?
Well, yeah, I went to classes, right. They had classes for the people that came in here were either electronic or mm-hmm. pneumatic technicians. I was classified as a pneumatic, so we had a school in White Bluffs, in a warehouse in White Bluffs.
Okay.
And we had both pneumatic and electronic people in there, and they were from all the areas. So I think the school lasted probably about 6 months, if I remember correctly.
Because an awful lot of your instruments would have overlapped with everybody else's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume that were there standards that were used throughout the site?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Was there competition among you guys and the 100 area instrument people?
No.
Or didn't really know what they were doing?
No, no problem there.
Yeah. But you did share information?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So when you were in instruments in the 200 area, were you more narrow than the entire, both 200 areas, or for some aspect of them?
Oh, yeah, both. I worked in T plant.
Were you assigned to T plant, or that was just one of the buildings you took care of?
No, I was assigned to T plant.
Okay.
And also the tank farms, one period.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in a group that had the powerhouse and the remote weather instruments.
Right. Now that was. Do you ever have to climb the weather tower?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. It was elevator or walk up?
They put an elevator in there later, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. There was no elevator at first.
You had to climb up?
Yeah. One time we changed all the thermocouples or thermones. I'm sorry. That on the various stages where they measured temperature. And
you had to work on the outside of the tower, or how secure was it?
Oh, you could reach from the tower.
Okay.
Yeah.
And over. So, what was your span of time dealing in the 200 areas? Do you think, for the various jobs you had?
Oh, for my whole career, just about.
Was it? Okay.
I think so.
Which went until when?
88.
Okay. 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I even got a 35-year watch.
A watch?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Rockwell.
Okay.
It's kind of funny, you know, you work for all these various contractors at the same job, essentially. Essentially, like I was a project engineer for General Electric. Arco,
mm-hmm.
Rockwell, and then of course I retired from Westinghouse.
Yeah. Did retirement work out okay after all those transitions?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, okay. Because mm-hmm. I know that was always something that it depended on who you were working for.
I worked a little longer. I was going to retire when I was 65, and I worked into the next year because I was upgrading the railroad as a project engineer. That was one of the projects, and I wanted to finish that before I retired, so I did.
Okay.
So I worked maybe in January, to January and February or something like that.
I guess the part I'm interested in the most right now is tea plant specific work.
Okay.
And I guess what kind of clearance did you need for that versus other places? Was it?
I think you didn't. You just need, I think, just secret clearance.
Was it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
But you had I had TS clearance because I worked sometimes once in a while in 2, 3, 4, 5.
TS, was that
top
higher?
Secret.
What was Q level?
Q was normal, I think.
That was just the basic?
Yeah, Q.
Okay, but you had a higher one.
Well, later I did for working in the metal prep building.
Right. So when you went to when do you think you went to tea plant? Was that early on?
Yeah, I think so. That'd be
in 51 or
it had to be in 51,
okay.
I think.
Okay. Was that your first assignment in the separations area, actually working in the separations process?
Working in one of the process buildings, yeah.
Okay.
Because before that, we had the powerhouse and tank farms. Well, the tank farms I worked in, and powerhouse, tank farms, and the weather instruments. Yeah.
Followed that, or?
Well, that was before I went into tea plant, I think.
Was that quickly? Hmm? You went into tea plant within the year of getting here.
Oh, yeah.
But you worked in all those other places, too?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one group had the three assignments. One group took care of the powerhouses, the tank farms, and the remote instrument groups.
And you weren't stuck in one building all day, obviously. The assignments
came up.
And they would move you around.
Right.
So what were you doing at tea plant when you first got there?
I worked as an instrument technician.
Which meant you could go anywhere in the building to work on instruments?
Mm-hmm.
How many of you were there?
Gee, I don't know. Maybe counting the shift people, probably 10 in a group.
10 instrument people?
10 instrument people, yeah.
On any one shift or for the entire fall
shift? For the entire thing.
So there might be two or three.
One man on a shift. See, that's, we were working 6 days a week.
Right.
So shortchanged was a matter of a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't work shift there. I worked days, but I worked shift later at Radox.
Okay.
When they started up Radox.
Everything they did at T-Plant was remote controlled, so I presume that instruments were as critical as instruments can ever get.
Oh, yeah.
Were you sort of on emergency call, and when things came up, you had to get to them right away?
Yeah, of course, as I say, they had shift coverage, so they had a man there all the time.
But was it frequently, would the process stop until you guys fixed it?
No, because it was batch.
Okay.
They get into the process, I mean, start and stop, I'm not too sure of that, but it was a batch process.
People weren't yelling at you continually about holding up the process.
No.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Did you know much about the process while you were working there?
Not too much, because it was a no-no to read the run books and things like
right.
that.
Right. The logs?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
You get caught reading those, you get a little lecture, but I don't, nobody read them, because really, excuse me, if you were a chemist or something, it might be fine, but.
Right, otherwise it would be boring reading.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have to dress up and go in the canyon to do instruments?
One
of you, how often was that? Weekly or every
now and then? No, that wasn't very often.
Mm-hmm.
We had one project, I remember. When they sent the slugs over from the 100 areas, they were in water. And it was always a problem sending the cast cars back empty because they wouldn't have the heat anymore and they'd freeze up.
Oh, in the wintertime?
Yeah.
Really?
So what they were trying to do was establish a point where they did not need the water to cool the slugs.
Oh.
So what they did is there's a swimming pool, or what they call a swimming pool, a big pool in tea plant. And they'd bring a basket of slugs in and put it down in there, and then we'd put a thermocouple in amongst the slugs. And then we'd get out of there, and they'd pull it up, put it up on deck, and watch the temperature. Got too hot, they put it back in. They wanted to see how long it would take for the green slugs to cool down enough so that they, you know, wouldn't need the water coming over. Was that
they wanted to find out if they needed it coming over from the reactor.
From the reactor with the slugs. See, the slugs provided heat.
They weren't set up at the reactor to do these kinds of measurements. It was easier
apparently
to do
not,
it at your place.
We did them, okay. It was easier to do with the swimming pool there.
Okay.
And, or the pool, rather.
Okay, so they'd measure the temperature in the water and out of the water. And
mostly out of the water. Pull it out and
let it
heat up. And then established a point where they was safe to ship it without water so they wouldn't freeze up in the winter. I mean, that's just one
little thing. Where would, why didn't they just empty the water out after taking the fuel out of the cask car?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah. So what they wanted to do was ship it over without water in the
right.
cask car. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the times you had to suit up and be out there. Where the heck were you when they were lifting fresh fuel out of the swimming pool?
Oh, no, you don't get it.
Yeah.
Get out of the, you don't stay in the canyon.
And were they, so you put the thermocouple down in the water while it was safe to do
in
so?
In the basket, you know, the slugs come in, were in a basket.
Right.
And you put the thermocouple down in there with tongs. And then...
you'd leave at that point?
Leave, right.
Okay. And the crane operator...
Of course, the wire's hooked up and so forth. Crane operator would then pull it out, put it up on deck. And then they'd watch the temperature. If it got too hot, to go back in the pool.
Okay. So you were looking down in the cell then? You were working down in, or, you know, looking over the edge
the,
and...
the pool.
Was it big?
Oh, yeah. It was a big pool.
Yeah. How many buckets were down there when you were doing this?
Oh, this is just the one bucket.
Just for the test?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think it would have been too hot if it had others.
And they tended to have redundancy in instruments, so if something did go out, they could continue the process?
I think so, in a way. But with the batch process, of course, you could always stop.
At any given point?
Right.
Where did you tend to... Where did you spend most of your time dealing with instruments? What part of the building?
In the gallery, operating gallery.
Okay.
That's where your readout instruments are. And it would be a matter of routine calibration.
According to a schedule?
Preventative maintenance.
That include, like, the big scales they had? For what?
Yeah, we had a scale man.
Yeah.
I worked with him sometimes. Everybody, he took care of the scales there, and also the railroad scales. Riverland, which is where the rail used to come in, they had scales there. I remember going over there one day with him. Then, let's see.
So there was always, every day, if there were no problems, you still had work to do every
routine.
Day, calibrating routine work. How often were there problems where you had to stop what you were doing and go fix something? Was it frequent or infrequent?
I would say infrequent.
Just every now and then?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go up in the crane operator's cab?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. While it was
the,
running?
The periscopes belong to the instruments groups.
Oh, okay.
So, but we had this. There was a specialist from the 300 area that took care of the periscopes, but we might go with them, you know, help out.
While they were working or just during off hours? Would
oh,
you
off
be
hours. Because
you
couldn't have any cells open or anything, though you were behind a concrete wall.
Because you were working on the outside on the periscopes themselves.
Periscopes, right.
Right, okay. Was there TV installed at that point?
No, that was too early. We put TV in on a Purex, the first ones. And that didn't work too well at first. The first TVs. But the Purex was the first application.
Okay. You don't remember any TV screens inside the crane at T-point?
No, not at T-point. Not then, no.
Yeah. So suiting up was sort of a normal thing to do, not frequent maybe?
No, it wasn't frequent.
Yeah.
Usually it was pretty well organized. And
but weren't the instruments as, there were, you know, the other ends of the instruments were all in the cells, right?
The sensing elements?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And what would you do if something went out, you know, in one of the dissolvers or, you know?
Oh, they probably, they were on jumpers, so the crane operator would take them out.
You would take the whole thing out.
And if conceivably it would be hot, so they would bury it, and you'd have a replacement one, which.
And were you the one who would install, you know, a thermocouple or something in a jumper?
In a jumper, yeah. You wouldn't build a jumper, but you put the thermocouple in.
Where would you go to do that?
Up at the maintenance shop where they built the jumpers.
So they'd simply have an order for that, and you'd go in and they'd tell you put it in there?
Sometimes they had spares, depending on the instrument.
Was it all pretty well set up and easy to do, or was there still lots of, you know, jury rigging or making fit or something like that?
Oh, I thought it was pretty well thought out, planned before.
You guys weren't changing things, improving, upgrading all the time, where you had to constantly fine-tune it?
No, I don't think so. Not in that sense.
And the instruments in the gallery was like hundreds of yards of instruments. Mm-hmm. Did you understand? I guess most of them were repeated instruments, though, right? There was a finite number of types of instruments.
Yeah, you'd have weight factor and BG and temperatures, pressures.
Microphones?
They had microphones, yeah.
I thought that was a pretty real black and white way of finding out if something was working.
Yeah, you can hear it.
Yeah, real basic. So if you had training or experience on any one of those, you could go down the aisle and find them all up and down the operating gallery.
Yeah, and then the radiation instrumentation, they were usually Beckmans. They're pretty standard. The weight factor in that was usually a ring balance. And temperature was usually Honeywell or somebody like that, Brown.
All standard equipment, kind of. Did radiation ever interfere with some of the instruments? I know when they first were building Hanford, that was an issue with any materials, is how would heavy radiation affect the materials. Did it have any effect on instruments where you guys had to take that into account?
No, I don't think so. It did on the, I remember on periscopes in the tank farm.
For looking into tanks?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it affected the glass, or?
Well, the light, we'd have to change out the light bulb, and that was...
Do you know a guy named Bill Painter?
Oh, yeah.
He told me a long story once about being involved in a crew where they had to pull the light thing out.
Everybody gets a few seconds.
And they all got dosed, and they,
take a quick turn on the light thing and then get out of there.
So were you involved with that from an instrumentation perspective?
That's when I was in the tank farm group. He was probably in the same group, same time.
Okay. And that was just one sort of, not odd, but, something that came up that you had to deal with.
Right.
And that was just the light bulbs?
Mm-hmm. In that case, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes when they were sluicing, they'd hit the periscope with the sluice nozzle,
Right.
Pop. And then the bulb would just burn out, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Huh. But back at T plant, the radiation, you never found yourself having to add a shield or something in order to deal with that. They were all already had been proven, I guess, in the previous few years. Did you work? Who took care of the instruments in the lab?
We did.
Oh, you did.
Same groups. We had one man assigned to the lab at T plant. And then when he needed help, he'd get others from the group. But he worked all the time to, especially in the counting room, where they were counting samples all the time. That took a lot of time as far as keeping one man busy. So,
were there any unique instruments in the lab that you wouldn't have found elsewhere in the building?
I'm not sure.
Were there like chemistry instruments, like gas chromatographs, or?
No, for the most part, counting samples, See, I was trying to think of I can't think of any.
Okay.
That would be special.
Mm-hmm. What was the deal with the padlocks on the panels?
On the jet? So you couldn't jet from one tank to another without. Yeah, they had padlocks on the jet controls. They were a wheel type of thing.
Simply before you could move from one tank to another?
Yeah, we didn't do that. Of course, the operators did that.
And was that for every tank? Was there like dozens of locks all the way down?
Mm-hmm. Every panel board had three or four.
Okay.
Depending on, you know, that's how they moved the material, was they jetted it from one to another.
A jet being a substitute for a pump, right?
Right.
And that's what you would see in the logbook, I guess. They'd get to a certain point, and then they check something, and then
I
say it's okay to.
Except us. Again, I say, yeah. We didn't have, I wasn't privy to looking at the logbook. So.
But it seems like if the only way they knew that things were working right and it was okay to jet it to the next tank was if the instruments were working right.
That's right.
Didn't that kind of put a lot of pressure on the instrument people? Or was it just so well running that it wasn't an issue?
No, I think because of their experience, they would know if something was a little off standard. You know, for instance, if you started to jet from one to another, and the weight factor didn't increase in the tank you were jetting into, or say it didn't decrease in the one, they would know right away.
Because as soon as they'd done a few runs, they would have a routine that they would know what it should be.
Right.
Okay. What about in the electrical or the pipe gallery? Did you ever go down there for instruments too?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. There's thermocouples there.
Thermocouples down where?
The wires came through the galleries.
For
cell temperatures and stuff.
So you might have to tap into those.
Mm-hmm. Later on, I was electrical inspector and instrument inspector for 200 areas for about 10 years. Of course, that's where I would get a little fuzzy as what I did when.
Right.
Or, you know, because I'd have projects where we'd put in much of things. But that was at a later period.
How about adding new instruments? Was there much of that going on? Mm-hmm. You know, I said earlier improvements, but did they just find new ways to measure things or new instruments to use?
Well, no, because the new plants were coming up.
Okay.
Here comes Redox, see, which has automatic control. And
so they never had to worry about making huge improvements at T-Plant because it did what it was supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you weren't working with people to design new instruments to make it work better?
Not then. Later on, of course, most of the instrument projects later on I had where they upgraded. But did you want some coffee?
Actually, let me turn the tape. I don't think I want any coffee, thank you. One sec. I'm going to turn the tape
over.
Okay, it's working again. How about just generalize things like what was the most interesting part of the job when you're dealing with instruments?
Oh, I don't know. Probably getting your calibration to come out. I don't know.
That was the most satisfying part of the job.
I think so.
Is you because you were calibrating all the time?
Part of the time you were doing that. Right. I don't think all the time, but.
And if it didn't calibrate, you were. That's where your skill came in.
Start over and fix it.
Yeah. Was that the most difficult part of the job, too?
Let's see. The most difficult part of the job was working shift, I guess.
Oh, you mean like the graveyard?
Well, on a six-day week.
Yeah.
I think you had, 12 hours off between one of the shifts when they had what they call a short change and a long change.
Okay.
Now, everybody in the plant was working these hours 6 days a week.
So what was the routine? What was the schedule, give or take?
Well, let's see. As I say, I've forgotten now which one, but between one of the changes, maybe when you went from days to the short change or long change. Anyway, you had only 8 hours, I think it is, on one. Maybe it was more than that.
And you would move up a shift?
No. Well, you rotated. Yeah, right, you did rotate. You changed shifts, which was difficult because of sleeping problems.
Yep. But I think since then they've learned to keep people on a shift longer, right?
Right. You can imagine, you know, going to sleep, say at 8 o'clock in the morning one time, the next time maybe 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock or normally in the evening, and this gets to be a little confusing after a while.
Right. How many tools did you carry around with you? Would you do your calibration at the site of the instrument?
Or yes.
You wouldn't take it out? Okay.
Well, you might, in some cases, you might take it back to the shop, work on it.
Well, how do you calibrate, like, a pH meter if its sensor is out in the canyon somewhere?
Well, you'd use some substitute voltage or
whatever. With a separate wire going to the instrument?
Mm-hmm. In the case of weight factors and things like that, you'd have manometers. And in the case of temperature, you'd have resistance boxes or voltage, things to measure voltage for the thermocouples.
Okay.
Or substitute. You might want to substitute voltages or to calibrate.
And on any given day, would you go down the line and do only one type of instrument? What was the schedule for the calibrator?
I'm not sure on routine. He had a routine of preventive maintenance.
But was it based on type of instrument, where you'd go down and do all the thermometers this week, or?
No, it was.
By panel board?
By panel boards, probably.
Yeah.
Of course, it had to correlate with the operation of the process.
Oh,
you couldn't take out an instrument out of service to calibrate it when you're operating. So it had to be coordinated.
And you then had a finite amount of time to get it done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it sounded like time pressure wasn't a big part of the job.
I don't think so.
Yeah. You weren't under the gun to keep the instruments going.
No, you didn't have time study per se. Which I never did like when I worked in the factory. That's what you had, it was time study. You'd have, you know, so much time to do a certain operation.
Yeah.
Of course, get energetic and work hard and get a little ahead, then you could coast a little.
Right.
But anyway.
How about at the tank farm, when you shifted to that aspect, did the job change drastically, or just the environment in which you worked?
Well, when I was in the tank farm, we had three things. We could powerhouse, tank farms, and weather instruments. So we might, depending on the need, we might work on any one of those three phases.
And where were you based? You know, what was your home office?
Oh, we had an office in, in the change, end of the change room, corner of the machine shop, we had an office in the 200 areas, mm-hmm. 200 west area.
And were you doing tank farms for both areas?
Let's see, did we do both? I don't think so. I think we just did the west area.
Okay.
Later on, we did both, though, seems to me.
And were the tanks filling up at that point? How were they dealing with the amount of room they had left? Was that part of your job? Was that part of somebody's job as far as...
That would be process operators.
Yeah. So how they were using or anything else didn't really affect what you did?
Mm-hmm.
Was there looking for leaks? Was that part of the instrumentation?
As far as...
what you guys were maintaining?
Tanks and that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had projects where we drilled wells around mm-hmm. the tank farm, monitoring wells.
And put instruments down them?
Oh, yeah.
Or would they take samples out?
Well, if you went to the water table, they would take samples out.
But I think the monitoring wells were later on.
And did they have an array of instruments down inside the tanks then?
Let's see, what was in the tanks? Of course, there was dip tubes for level, you know, and speed G. And imagine temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, how did they measure radiation? Probably had a chamber.
Inside?
Not in the tank itself, but maybe in a well down alongside the tank. Or
oh, okay. Somewhere. And how often would you have to suit up and be on top of the tanks?
Not too often.
Yeah.
They had the control house where the readout instrumentation was. And a lot of your work was in the control house or instrument house.
Did you ever have tasks where there was a real short amount of time they allowed you to work on it?
Well, changing light bulbs is the shortest.
That was a And that was because the lights and the camera had been put down inside the tank.
Right.
And were contaminated, not wet with it, probably. They weren't in the liquid. They were just above it.
We were above it, but
yeah,
they might be. Sometimes they got hit by sluicing. Because at that time, they were sluicing the tanks.
Right.
For uranium recovery. So.
So the sluicing they were doing wasn't anything unknown. It was just the normal routine for getting the liquids out.
Right.
Changing a light bulb. Not real romantic, if you ask me. Not too exotic. So what was your job while they were doing that? How were you involved with changing light bulbs, or how were you involved with the camera and everything?
Well, not
you weren't out there anyway. Did they call you in for it?
Yeah, they took a number of people to do this. So, you know, someone would start it, and then the next one would maybe do it. Take three or four people to change the bulb.
Change, and then was it just a normal bulb or a spot or?
It was probably a spot bulb.
But it screwed in like a regular light bulb?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one person couldn't take 15, 20 seconds to unscrew it?
Take too long.
Wow.
So it was real short.
And they called you in simply to help change the light bulbs?
Well, I was part of that group.
Okay.
I was part of the other group.
Huh. And did you use up that week's allotment of dose?
Probably.
Because Bill was mentioning something about sitting around not being able to do anything for a while.
Well, we always did work like on a cold side, though.
Well, evidently he didn't that time. Well, that was one aspect, one time in his job where they had to sit around for a day waiting for something else to come along. But changing light bulbs does not sound
right. He came along a little bit later than I think, if I remember right. So maybe they changed their method of operating or something.
Well, what he was talking about was exactly the same thing.
Or maybe they gave him more exposure than they gave.
Yeah.
In that case, they would probably want to keep him from.
And what do you remember? What your retirement dosage was? Your lifetime dosage?
No.
Not too high.
I don't think it was too high.
Being exposed was not a normal part of your job.
No, because later on, I did a lot of what would you call it? Office type work.
Right.
Because I wrote instruction manuals, and I remember I taught a class, the operators instrument class, at Purex, and this a fellow named Bill Shilnick and I set up preventive maintenance file for Purex, and then I worked as project engineering. So you see,
yeah.
And then I was an electrical and instrument inspector, you know, as I said, for 10 years. And most of that was not hot stuff. That was new, you know, new buildings, new.
Right.
So.
Was the instrumentation at Redox much more exciting than it was at TPOC?
Oh, yeah, it was. Had automatic control there instead of batch.
So the continuous process was not just monitored by instruments, but controlled by it.
Controlled by them. Yeah.
Where at T-Plant, it was all padlocks, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Batch.
And switch on a centrifuge, switch it off. Entirely manually controlled.
That centrifuge reminds me, you know, my daughter was about yay high. They had open house. And had set a cell up U plant with a centrifuge.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in there. You know, we could go in, look down in there. And next day, no more kids. So that was, I think, we must have went in on a Saturday, and then that Sunday morning there was no more children. Because it was kind of, but it was kind of unusual. Some, you know, she'd been in plants where, seen inside of a canyon building where a lot of people couldn't go.
Yeah, you can't now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have hardly anybody in there. That's funny. What about, the job wasn't all that hazardous because you weren't normally going into the canyon or places like that.
Well, not for me, because say a lot of a portion of my career out there was kind of office work type stuff, or mm-hmm. clean work, new work.
Were you at T plant when they stopped using it?
No.
You had left already?
I went down to Radox
okay.
before the building was finished. Because we were in a Quonset hut between Radox and U-Plant, or a temporary building anyway. Yeah. And working on instrument instruction manuals until we went into the building.
Manuals for people to use them or to?
To use them to maintain the instrumentation.
Okay. People to maintain them, not for the operators.
No, in that case it was for maintenance.
Yeah, okay.
Later on I worked on maintenance, operating manuals for the operators, okay. But that was for Pyrex.
And were you doing it from your instrumentation background or just because you understood the process? How did you get involved in writing operators' manuals?
Well, no, not operators' manuals. These were instrument manuals to
okay.
educate the operators.
If
you were
right.
a new operator, and you didn't, what you'd say, well, what's weight factor? See, well,
yeah.
here you've got to write up in a manual with diagrams showing what weight factor is, what it does, and so forth, or what's, you know, anything, what's PG, what's, anyhow, that's what the manuals.
And it might be a paragraph or it might be five pages, but it was pages, just to explain yeah. the instrument and how it worked.
Yeah. End up, you know, like a loose leaf book about that thick. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this educated the operators to how the instrumentation did work.
Because again, instrumentation was the whole thing. It's like flying an airplane blind. I mean, they had to rely on instruments for virtually everything.
Yeah, because there's no other way.
Because the only visible part of it was when the crane operator lifted out a bucket, put it in the dissolver.
Mm-hmm.
After that, everything else was via instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And in the operating gallery with all those gauge boards down there, how many people would be standing operating them? How many operators would be in there?
I don't know, maybe one or two a panel, I don't know.
Oh, at a panel?
Or a section.
So there'd be quite a few people, all the way down at least.
Yeah, there may be, maybe depending on the process, of course. We're talking about T-plant.
Yeah.
Okay. You might have one or two panels, sections. Then again, depending on where they were in the process, too, I guess.
Okay. Did you ever do any instrumentation for the stack gases going out? Any of the monitoring?
Yeah, I was. Is it 291 building?
Right, I think so.
Yeah, we had instruments in that building, stack.
And that was that a room where you had to suit up and spend a little time?
No. Oh, yes, you did. You get in there? I think you did, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Going way back.
And they had filters in at that point, right? By the time
yeah,
you got there?
Prior to my coming here is when they had a problem with the... And then they put in sand filters. So they had to... I guess they started, I'm not sure, but I think they operated before without sand fill.
Right. I think when they started up, it had no filters at all.
Right. And then they, but just before I got here, they put in the sand filters.
And then later on, they went to the silver, I forget what it was called.
Silver nitrate?
Yeah. It's a step up.
Yeah, that was in the building, wasn't it? Yeah.
Did they have instruments in the filter?
In the filter? In,
yeah, down in the sand?
I don't think so. I think what they do is measure differential across the various parts.
Okay.
Yeah. Get the drop across the filters. With
coming in and going out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I haven't read yet, but what did they do after a period of time of using that sand? Would they start a new one, or?
I don't think so. Okay. They were big. I don't think they did anything about it.
And a lot of the stuff that went through, it was fairly short-lived, right? The iodine.
Iodine, yeah. Short half-life.
Did you do instrumentation? What am I thinking of? The rough instrumentation that would just be checking motors and heat on bearings and things like that? Was that part of the instrumentation?
Sometimes. Usually most of that went to the electricians.
Okay.
But we might measure bearings and fan bearings and stuff like that. So they had thermocouples on the fans, I remember, on the bearings.
Oh, to see if they were getting hot or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't know if they had an interlock to shut them down. I don't remember now. The old ones.
Did you ever get called up in the middle of the night to come out?
No.
Oh, okay.
And that, again, was because they had shift coverage. I worked shift, but that was during the startup of Radox.
Okay.
I didn't like it.
Well, what do you mean working shift versus what? What do you call
working
it
otherwise?
Working days. Oh, shift meaning
shift
off were normal hours.
Oh, right.
Okay.
And again, because it was six day weeks. And then let's see, how did you, I forget exactly how it worked, but anyway, you worked more than a week before you had time off. Well, they had what they call long change, and people like that. I think you had about 5 days off, and people take off on trips.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody here, they came from some other place at that time.
Right.
You know, we're not born
Nobody
here.
Was born here, yeah.
So they often liked it so they could go home or whatever they were going to do.
What was the most troublesome instrument to work on, do you think? The one that was either the hardest to work on or needed your attention the most?
I don't know.
Yeah? Nothing jumps out?
Might be the Ledoux bells and the powerhouse, like steam flow meters and that, because they had mercury in them.
Mm-hmm.
And he had piping on them where you had to hook your instruments to it.
The mercury was in the pump or in the meter?
Mercury was a seal in the meter between the two pressures. Okay. And the Ledoux bell had a parabolic inside of it, which gave you a linear flow instead of a square root output.
Hmm.
Because, you know, flow is related to square root. So, it extracts square root for you, gives you a linear.
Interesting.
But they were sitting in, because of the big difference in pressure, they were in mercury for a seal.
Why would...
The ring balances were, it was actually a ring that had mercury in it, too. But it moved, rotated on pivots.
Huh. And you said you like to dabble with trinkets. Were you a clockmaker or radio builder or at home?
No, I built radios, yeah.
Yeah? Like from scratch or from Heathkit? Or
Heathkit, junk like that.
Uh-huh. Are they still around, by the way?
I don't know. Last thing I bought for them was an electric filter for the furnace. That was quite a while ago.
The one thing I bought from them was in 1974 probably, was a windshield wiper variable speed edition. Yeah. I was way ahead of my time. That was the only thing I ever built from them. I think one problem today is they probably cost more, so much more, than just buying it off the shelf.
Yeah, because the foreign inputs, these things are real cheap.
Yeah. I can just see
a little digital camera there. Real cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all kinds of things like that.
Yeah. Let me turn this off for a minute.
Okay.